This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is iFanboy Special Edition Invincible Season 1.
This bloody road remains a mystery.
Welcome to iFanboy Special Edition Invincible Season 1. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with part of the animation brain trust, Paul Montgomery.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
Dr. Ryan Haupt was unavailable. He's in surgery. But we brought on adjunct member of the brain trust, Josh Flanagan.
Now, I haven't done one of these. Was I supposed to prepare in any way? Because no. I have to tell you right from the top.
No.
Okay, good. Okay.
The secret is that we never actually watch these things.
Sure.
We're going off Wikipedia entries. That's how we do it. There's too many movies. Paul and I have been doing Wikipedia entry reviews for years.
For about a decade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In fact, some have said Jimmy Wales himself has credited us to really bringing them to the forefront way that they hadn't been prior to us not doing work and using them to cheat at the stuff we were supposed to do, I believe. Why don't you move on with your show before I ruin it?
So we are here to talk about Invincible Season 1, currently on Prime. So there'll be spoilers. And this is the adaptation of the Robert Kirkman, Ryan Otley, Corey Walker comic Invincible, which is a property that Kirkman's been trying to get animated for years. There was the 2008 motion comic series. Remember that?
Right.
We interviewed him about that.
I remember it from the Wikipedia page.
We interviewed him about that at Comic-Con, however many years ago that was. And I know just from friends that he's been trying to get this animated for years. He's obviously the man behind Walking Dead and the Empire therein. And this is his other epic. And we were talking before the show started about how this is one of those books that, obviously not now because it's over, but sort of defined iFanboy. It was one of our early books in the podcast that we would always recommend. People would always say, what superhero book should I read? And it was always Invincible, Invincible, Invincible.
And it was just a little, because it was a little off center. It was kind of a new thing. It came out in 2003. You know, it was a little... it wasn't mainstream comics, so it actually required a little word of mouth. It made up for that later on, but it was a bit of a hidden gem at the beginning because I don't know if people remember, you know, Robert Kirkman was not a household name, which is how we got our show a lot early on.
And also, it never reached the heights of The Walking Dead, you know, which is a book that defied every convention and as an indie comic that grew in audience every issue. But Invincible stayed like a steady in terms of sales, you know, book for the 15 years it ran. For 15 years, it's incredible.
Not only that, I think, you know, one of the things about all these people who make stuff that then gets made into another property is that the comic book falls to the wayside so often. Yeah. You know? But Invincible and Walking Dead, you know, they came out every month forever.
You hear that, George R. R. Martin? Invincible got to be a comic, right? Because the show, the Walking Dead show started in the middle, the book was still going on. Well, Invincible was a comic the entire, I'm putting aside the motion comic series, which I never even saw.
Motion comics are a thing we'd all best left in the past.
You know, Invincible was a comic the entire run.
What platform were motion comics on? I'm just trying to think, like, how would you experience, for the children listening?
ColecoVision.
Good question, because you're asking it. I'm like, I don't know.
Didn't MTV it?
I think you could buy them as like DVDs.
I
think you could watch them in that way.
You could do that, yeah. And I remember buying some through
MTV
iTunes.
Definitely did it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was Invincible MTV iTunes. Motion comic. Yeah. They probably did it on their website. Or iTunes. I don't know. There's not important.
I bet that cast wasn't nearly as good as the one they got for this show.
Well, let's talk about the show. So it was eight episodes on Prime. Each episode is about 40-ish minutes.
It came out with, it was three to start. It was like the first three came out.
They dropped three, and then it was weekly after that, which is great. It encompasses the first three traits of the 25 trade run.
Really?
Yes. I assumed it was the first one, because that's just how I always assumed. But no, I pulled them out after I finished watching it.
I mean, 40 minutes per episode.
It's a lot.
Eight episodes, that, yeah.
And his issues, the same with Walking Dead, wouldn't really constitute an entire episode of a television program.
No. But it literally ends in the same scene as the final, the third trade. Like, it's the same piece of dialogue. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of meaty stuff here. Kirkman was one of the, you know, Skybound, his company, was the company that did this. He has a whole development wing that people may not know about, to do shows and things. So his company produced the show. He's an executive producer. He wrote the final episode, the very least. I wasn't always paying attention to the writers, but he was the writer on the final episode.
Yeah, I caught that.
I'll just say it. I was fucking blown away by this show. You know, they announced it. I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, I'll probably check it out. And then I watched the first episode that first weekend. I didn't watch all three. I just watched the first one because it was 40 minutes and I had other things to do. And I was like, wow, that was really, really good. And then I sort of fell off of it. And people I know outside of comics, like our buddy Hank, who the patrons will know from our hangouts, he's an animation professional. He's been working in animation for 4 years. And he was like, this show is incredible. Like, this is
really
incredible.
Impressive. It, just in terms of, like, on a technical level, for animation,
storytelling is great.
You take any of the big names in animation, and they have their weak action sequences. Like, oh, the B team was on this action. Like, I wish the A team had not B.A. Brock.
Right. Cannibal.
But like,
Cannibal's a great background guy.
They had the A team working on this particular action sequence, and like, I don't feel like there were weak action sequences in this. There are sections where you're like, oh, that's a weird CG background, but the fight sequences, which are kind of what made Invincible.
Yeah.
In addition to the character stuff, but like those incredibly gory, brutal action sequences.
Well, this is a hard R.
This is a hard cartoon. This is an adult animated series.
And the thing is, you know, Paul and I review the DC films, which are PG-13 and sometimes R, but they're not on this level. This is hard.
Like
R.
When they go for, like, sometimes they go for an R, and it's like they're really trying for it in the language. Like,
right.
They're like, we're going to be tough, and we're going to use some four letter words, and that's going to make us an R-rated thing. The violence is never really the thing. The action is sometimes interesting. They experiment sometimes, but nothing that this, like, they're doing some really cool stuff, like where they're positioning the quote unquote camera, and just the choreography in the action sequences in this are just next level stuff. Like, this does not look like a series. This looks like a movie, like an animated film that's where they're they're really bringing in the big guns on each action sequence. And there's at least one big, huge action sequence per episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Josh, you're not normally an animated watcher, although you watch some with your kids. What did you think overall of this?
I don't get really excited about an adaptation of something I really like and already know. Because, you know, if I do the math, most of the time it is underwhelming. Mm-hmm. At the best, usually it's like, that's kind of cool, but you don't want it to. And I think right away, I kind of watched, I was like, oh, all right, I'll check this out. And my sort of first reaction was two things. One, I was like, this is the comic book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I don't know that I've seen a better adaptation of a comic book to an animated thing that it's so perfectly encapsulated the thing that the comic book was. I mean, it looked like it. It felt like it. All translated well, and really did the whole way through. Like, it clearly Robert Kirkman was involved with this. This wasn't somebody, you know, developing his thing for television. That was like
Corey Walker too, who did the first seven issues, and then did sporadic throughout the series.
Yeah,
but like I think he did the character designs and stuff, and so it is a one-to-one adaptation.
And as you get, I think Corey Walker did the first arc, and then Ryan Ottley comes in. My math might be off.
Ryan Ottley came in doing Corey Walker. Like, I was looking through the first few trades, and I was like, when does Ottley start? And I was like, oh shit, this is Ottley. Like, he in the beginning he was basically aping Walker,
which is interesting because he was not. He hadn't done any professional work prior to that.
Yeah.
So he was really, I don't know where the hell he pulled him out from. I did know at one point, but I've forgotten, you know, and you got this guy, but I think that even though their initial designs and the look of it is the Corey Walker stuff, you know, as they get into the action scenes, that really gory stuff, the huge fight scenes, some of the other characters that show up later, your battle beasts and things like that's Ottley, you know, and like all that blood spattered stuff, that's Ottley. And it just meshed all that stuff really well, you know? And so as I kept going and watching, and I was just like, wow, this is the exact experience of the comic book, but translated into an animated style that, you know, works for it, that complements it. It didn't really bring anything new other than sort of like, here's what it looks like in this kind of way. And you're like, oh, that's neat. And I guess the other immediate impact was like, I finished the first episode and I was like, how did they get this cast? And then as I kept going through it,
I'll talk about the cast in a second, but I do want to talk about Kirkman and you know the fidelity of the adaptation. And I think what's interesting is two things. One is, you know, it was 15 years ago. I'd forgotten a lot of the details of the story, so it wasn't like I was knowing everything that was coming. It's like, oh right, that happened. Yeah. Oh right. So there was still a bit of surprise for me in the twists, because I, you know, I obviously know the later book much better, and I know the broad strokes and. But, you know, some details, I was like, oh, right, that was the, like, so that was fun for me as a viewer. But also, I got the sense that, you know, this allowed Kirkman to go back and sort of tweak things. Because it is slightly different. Like, if you look through the book, which, like, I'm doing now, you know, this whole bit's missing. They change the order around. Characters are slightly different. So I feel like, you know, it allows a guy like Kirkman, who is a much more seasoned storyteller now, to go, like, this is how I would have done it, as opposed to when I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. I forgot there's a whole bit in the middle here where Savage Dragon shows up.
It's sort of like with Batman Under the Red Hood,
right?
Where that feels like a polished adaptation of the original comic storyline, where you have it's Judd Winnick, right?
Yep.
So it's like Judd Winnick got to do the screenplay for that. So it's like, okay, I did this years ago. How would I do it now and do it a little bit more succinctly? And you kind of have to do it more succinctly when you're doing an adaptation, when you're doing whatever dramatic media. So I didn't stick with the Invincible comic all the way through. I actually read just a little of it at the beginning, and I sort of liked it, but I kind of got what I wanted out of it. So I don't know. When I heard about this, I was like, isn't this kind of like, did they miss, you know, the window on doing this? But apparently not, because it's getting really decent feedback.
Yep.
And it's selling a lot of books.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another consideration.
Well, it's a perfect play for Amazon, because the algorithm then links you right to the trades.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And you're going to get, you know, like, it's one of those things, like, if you like that show and you get the trades, you're going to get exactly what you wanted out of that. You know?
Like, but I mean, for me, was sort of like, maybe I'll watch that at some point, but I was in no rush to see it. And then, a bunch of my friends were talking about it and saying, you know, I'm not into the whole, like, you know, over the top, brutal, gory thing, but like, it's so technically impressive. You kind of got to watch it. And then, you know, Connor said, do you want to talk about this for a podcast? I'm like, sure. So I checked it out and my expectations were kind of, I didn't have expectations. I was just, let's see what they do. And
I was kind of with that. Cause you know, sort of was like, all right, I'll check the first one. Cause I'm not doing anything right now. And I found myself, you know, like then getting into the point where I was like, ooh, it's Friday or whatever day it came out.
It's a good story. I mean,
It is.
You know, Josh and I, it's one of our favorite, if you talk about, you know, rank your favorite comics from the time you've been doing that Fanboy. I can't imagine, for me personally, Invincible is not in my top 10. I like it more than The Walking Dead, which I really liked a lot.
Yeah.
But the story that he ends up telling over the course of these 25 collected editions, 140-something issues, was an incredibly grand epic story of this family and the world. And the fact that they're even getting even this much out of it, I really can't imagine they're going to do the entire run. But
you know, with this guy?
Well, they're greenlit for seasons 2 and 3,
so that'll take us through trade 9 out of 25. That's a lot. So,
well, sure, but you know,
you never know. You never count out Kirkman. He's the savviest businessman in comics. But I do want to get to the voices, because
I was going to say, but before you do that, I think I want to get to the, there's one animation thing that I want to fill back in. Is that when I was watching it, it took me a little bit to realize, like, oh, this is Cell animation. And it reminded me of the animation, you know, of cartoons that Connor and I would have watched when we were kids.
Yes, that was a great point.
But done really well. Because if you go back and you watch the shows that we watched as kids, the animation is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
It's there's all these reused shots and you know, it's very bland. And this was just that, but done really, really well. You know, like, I thought it was really interesting that that's what they chose to do. Because it took me a minute to go, oh my God, this isn't CGI. Because everything is.
This is the way I prefer cartoons.
Obviously, in places like vehicles and background stuff,
which we're used to from all the DC films. The whole bit at the end. Was it Chicago, the city at the end? That gets fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was all CG. Like, that was all CG city. But for the most part, it's like, even if it's not hand drawn,
they blend
it
so well together in a way that the DC stuff is getting better at. But from over the decade plus we've been reviewing those, they started out really rough and just like Cars, just looking like really boxy and like pre-Toy Story CG, and just that mapped on top of 2D animation is just rough. But yeah, it's like, if you think back on a show like Transformers or G.I. Joe or Thundercats or something like that, in your mind's eye it looks really good, but if you actually look at those episodes today, some of that animation is really rough.
Don't do it, Paul. Don't do it. Don't ruin my childhood.
Oh,
well,
we
did it when we watched the G.I. Joe episodes there was some bad stuff in there. That was all, you know, outsourced, you know.
Bad or amazing?
Both. But it isn't what you were, what he's saying.
I know exactly. Like, I know.
Whereas this is the thing that you thought you were watching.
I still think, so the Thundercats opening credits animation is awesome, but then it goes into the regular episode, and that's where it gets rough. This Invincible looks as good throughout the episode for the most part. Like, it's weird. The action sequences look better than the just two people talking in a room sometimes. Mm-hmm. Those look a little bit simple and copy and paste, but for the most part, the action stuff just always looks really, really strong, like in the intro to those shows, which is what you remember.
Right.
You know, that's the animation that you take away in your head, like, you know, 15, 20 years later.
Oh, yeah. The opening to G.I. Joe was terrific with the Statue of Liberty. Anyway, I do want to, before we move on to the voices, I had another thought, which was that, to me, you know, I've been talking about these cartoons for, you know, 20 years on my Fanboy, but oftentimes the cartoons can do amazing things that even the comics can't do. And I think that the brutality of the fighting really came through in this in a way it almost can't in the comics. And Invincible is really famous for its brutal battles and blood everywhere and how much red ink they use.
You've been looking at the book though, like, you haven't. Yeah. I don't remember that as being a thing that shows up until later.
Oh no, but, I mean, the part in where he kills, where Omni-Man kills Immortus or Immortal Man, whatever his name is, he's covered, you know, head to toe in blood. Okay.
But like, but there were like body parts and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But I was thinking about during the scene in the show where, his dad holds him up in front of the train, and then the train, drives through them, or they drive through the train. Yeah. Like something like that, you really can't express in static images in a comic how sort of awful that is.
Yeah.
To see him like, going through people. And
is that scene in the comics?
I don't know. I didn't go back and read it all, but it's just that kind of feeling, that a visceral effect of, oh God, this is terrible. You really, it's hard to convey in a single.
When I knew that was coming, I was like, I could sense it in the seconds before he did it. It was like, oh God, this is going to be so awful. And it was.
Yeah. So
it's really, this is one of those situations where you say visceral and it actually is worth.
And you see that scene and you think, well, at least it'll just be animation and you won't see what happens. And then like someone gets crushed or a leg flies by and you're like, I kind of didn't want to watch that, but I'm impressed.
So in the same vein of going back and changing things and making the story better, one of the things they did in the show was they made it much more racially balanced. When the book came out originally, the characters were almost all white. And Kirkman talked about in an interview recently that, really? He's like, I was Kentucky and my Corey Walker's from Arizona. We didn't really think about racial diversity when we made the comic. And so, you've got, first of all, the big change is that Mark Grayson's, his mother are Korean in the cartoon. And his girlfriend Amber is black as opposed to a blonde girl in the comics. So that there's a lot more of that, making it much more balanced in the show. And that leads to the voices. Now, again, Paul and I do this all the time, talk about these shows. A lot of big name actors are not good voice actors.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's like when we talk about like a prose writer moving to comics.
They're often very flat in their performance. I was so impressed. First of all, the cast is Murderers Row, and we're going to read the names off in a second, but the quality they brought to the roles, I didn't think anyone was bad. Steven Yeun is an incredible voice actor.
He was amazing.
He's an incredible voice actor. He's an incredible actor, but I was
like, this guy could be Spider-Man.
I was continually impressed by the quality of the voice acting from him. Like once an episode, I was like, damn, that was incredible line reading. And the thing is like, again, because we do this all the time, I'm always thinking about the performance from that. And it's not, you can't write it. You can't just, assume it's going to happen because it's a big time actor. There's just not always the case, but everyone in this show was incredible. Goggins playing very much against type. His character is very restrained and quiet. And that was, Steven Yeun, Sandra Oh, J.K. Simmons, Zazie Beetz, Walton Goggins, Jillian Jacobs, Andrew Reynolds, Chris Diamantopoulos, Zachary Quinto, Jason Mantzoukas, Clancy Brown, Mark Hamill, Ross Marquand, Mahershala Ali, John Hamm, Seth Rogen, Lauren Cohen, Chad Coleman, Michael Kudlitz, Jeffrey Donovan, Jonathan Groff, Michael Dorn, Jaimon Hunsu, Ezra Miller, Lenny James, Sonequa Martin-Green.
Several of these people doubling and tripling up on roles. Yeah.
Reginald Vell Johnson playing himself.
That was kind of cool.
It's a murderer's row. And even again, our buddy Hank, who works in animation, was like, I don't know how they got this cast. And how they got it was it's Robert Kirkman, and a lot of them. I did like the joke that the Justice League team was all voiced by the big actors from The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
I mean it was every time I'd look that actor up, I'd be like, "Holy shit, it's that person!" Like it was just
incredible. In small roles.
Yeah,
you're like, really? You got this guy to come in
like John Hamm.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Recurring but pretty small role.
Yeah, and I thought Mahershala Ali showed up, like, he's just one character in the beginning. He didn't even come back for a while.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? They just had him come in for that? I think the other thing that was interesting about it is that, and listen, I'm not the expert like you guys. And I actually mean that in that I don't think about it that much. But, a lot of those, I'm very good with voices. Like I'll hear something and I'll be like, oh, that's the person. That's who I hear. And so a lot of times I can find that distracting. Because I'm just seeing that person. But man, I'm a longtime fan of J.K. Simmons, as is, anybody who's paying attention. I lost him in there. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't.
After a while, he just is the character.
Yeah, he is. And then I go, that sounds like J.K. Oh, it is. But he really, it's a voice that I'm incredibly familiar with. And he was that character. And at first, I thought, I don't know that he sounds like that in my head. But it worked. Sandra Oh, I thought was wonderful.
Yeah.
Same deal. But yeah, the main cast was just really great.
Really, really impressive. And worked really well. you know, Zachary Quinto's robot, I think the same thing, like, eventually sort of melted into his character the same way that, like, yeah, in the beginning, it's like, oh, that's Zachary Quinto. And after a while, I sort of forgot that. Clancy Brown is Damian Darkwood. Was he in the comic, the Hellboy character?
I don't remember.
I didn't remember that at all.
Then I had to look up. I was like, wait, was Clancy Brown Hellboy?
No.
He wasn't. He was never Hellboy.
He should have been. But
I'm shocked that he wasn't. It's weird.
I don't remember that character being in a comic at all. It could have been. Again, it was 15 years ago.
I was just like, oh, Hellboy's here. Okay.
Sure. Well, Hellboy's not like Hellboy is not actually like an investigator. It's it's very Hellboy-like. Right. But
it's Hellboy, but it's, you know, the same way.
It's like Hellboy and Detective Chimp.
Yeah.
Fused into one.
It's also interesting to watch something like this with the knowledge of what's to come. Like, the whole time I'm like, get this Amber girl out of here. You know, because
I
made her a lot more sympathetic.
Because character
Amber in the book, as I recall, was like really annoying and terrible. As I recall, okay. So they really fleshed out Amber.
Was my least favorite part of this season.
Oh yeah, that you're just like, come on, Adam.
It was just so tedious, and I felt bad because it was like, she seems like a cool girl. She's being written as a cool girl. She's being voice acted by a very cool actress, and you know, she's got to be the complaining girlfriend who's always mad that Mark is late to things.
Well, the thing that worries me is that, you know, in the comic, once they split, it's over. I don't think we saw her again maybe a couple times, but she's brought back in here. And I was like, oh, they're not going to keep her around, are they? Like, they're not going to, like, string this out, because pretty much in the comics, as soon as they break up, Mark gets together with Adam Eve, and that's it for the whole rest of the series. So I was worried because, you know, basically the very end, they go to like the diner, and Sarah and Adam and the best friend, and they're all just like, oh,
she could be part of the crew.
Yeah, but that becomes awkward. Anyway,
well, there you go.
It was fun as a longtime reader because there were new things or different things or things you remember. But it was also, you know, fun. A lot of people I know who've never read the comic loved it, really loved it.
Sure. It really reminds me of, also on Amazon Prime, it reminds me of like The Boys. It was sort of,
well, that's what they recommend you watch when you finish.
Yes, the first Boys episode one.
But I think it's just one of those things that it was a surprisingly good adaptation, and unlike Invincible, it was actually better than the source material, I think, and many people have said so as well. But also, just, you know, it's one of those that you don't need to have known the comic book or have been a fan of the property in order to pick it up at all. And I think, you know, obviously Kirkman's got a talent with that kind of thing. But it kind of, it was just surprisingly good. Like, I was looking around like, did they know they could do this? This is, why aren't other things better?
They get you with that really great hook at the end of the first episode with the fight with, I mean, if you don't know that twist,
I remember it in the comics.
Right.
Which also, honestly, doesn't happen until the second trade. Like, it's pretty deep in the story.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That happens.
Okay. Because, I mean, I knew that much. There was a lot of stuff here that was completely new to me.
I watched it with someone who hadn't read the comics, and when that happened, she was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And same reaction, another friend of mine, she was like, what was that ending? I was like, yep, that's the whole thing.
That's like the Red Wedding of superhero fights.
It's the Thunderbolts of indie superhero comics.
The long tradition of evil Superman stories, which is what this is. And this did a really good job of making you feel that terror. Like, there's nothing that can stop him, you know, other than his son.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no matter what they throw at him, and even when they get really close, you know, his son saves the day before he realizes what's going on. But, you know, it's just terrifying. There's nothing that can stop that guy. And the anxiety of that was really strong.
And I think that one of the fun things about that book is that that's a really good observation, by the way. But the thing about the book is that that threat keeps growing and is ever present, because as we sort of learn about the Viltrumites, we do it of like, that is always the thing. Like, there's no way that this can be, like, the threats are real and it is maintained. And that's pretty special.
The Invincible was a book with true superhero stakes. It told an epic 15-year superhero story that had real stakes. People, you know, they got cloned and came back to life. And
yeah.
In the best superhero ways. But it was also a book where people died and horribly and trauma happened. And Mark was affected by trauma.
And it had enough behind it that it was, you know, it had all of the sort of continuity and stuff that you want out of big two comic books, really, mm-hmm. that you can't get anywhere else. So it had that, plus, you know, consequences and you know, no interference for any other reason. What happens in the story is what they want to happen in the story. And
I was really impressed with just how bald the analogs are.
Oh, yeah.
Like, like just like the Guardians of the Globe are the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty much one to one. You know, there is a Wonder Woman. There is
the Justice League as led by Abraham Lincoln.
As led by Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, exactly.
He was Abraham Lincoln.
And like we said, there is a Hellboy pretty much character in Damian Darkblood, and he's pretty cool. And that's what it would be like if Hellboy was in the DC, or I guess Detective Chimp, and he's already in the DCU. But anyway, as much as I've been a detractor to like the dark DC live action movies, this is dark and adult and mature, but in a thoughtful way,
like, and fun way.
And I think fun.
That, I think that any of your rules like that, meaning like I don't like dark depiction of the DC characters. Yeah. That's one of those things that is usually true, but every once in a while, something's real good, and that trumps
it. It's true until it's not.
And it's still the exception. You know, it's like you know, Connor and I will say like, well, we don't really like horror comics, and then there'll be a good horror comic. You know, like, you know, good's good, and you have to be able to recognize it and appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you end up liking a lot? Who ended up being some of your favorite characters from season one?
A lot of characters. You mentioned, yeah, there's a lot. So some surprise ones. I really like the concept behind is it the Mahler twins?
Yes, mm-hmm. Paul.
That's
why I asked the question, because I was like, I love those guys. Like, they're assholes and they're awful, but I ended up really liking them.
It's just a really cool concept that, like, one always thinks it's the clone of the other,
They give you an explanation for it, though. That's what I loved. I was like, oh, that's why they're arguing. But they do it on purpose.
And it's just a really smart idea and twist on just the big bruiser thug kind of villain. Right. And it's like when you first see them, like, oh, you think, you know, like they're these guys. But then, like, the more you learn, but there's like a lot of layers there. And I could see.
And they were just fun to be around.
Yeah, I'm glad that, you know, I assume they'll come back in season two. Like, there's more you can do with these characters. I really like the stuff with them and Robot, the Zachary Quinto character.
Robot becomes Robot's a very interesting, complex character that becomes really important to the story.
Because at first you're like, oh, he's the robot guy. He's like this is like Doom Patrol. Like, okay, right. And Doom Patrol those characters are complex in their own way, but this is, you know, a different thing. So it's like I was saying, like they're really bald one-to-one analogs of, you know, characters you've seen before from the start, but then they go to really interesting,
yes,
divergent places. And that was neat to see, especially as someone who has only read the beginning of the comic series and didn't, mm-hmm, you know, see where they went there.
Josh?
I think it's tough. I don't know that I've thought about it this way, but, sometimes the best gay friend can be sort of silly, and I think in the comic books it was a throwaway thing, but I thought that the performance in this was really good, mm-hmm, and it sort of, their friendship seemed more solid than it did in the comic.
Well, it also really embraced
a foil.
His lifestyle.
Yes.
Which is often not the case, is openly talking about having sex and, you know, all kinds of things that you don't normally get in a mainstream property.
Yeah.
Like, they say that they're a gay character, but there's no actual follow-through on it.
Yeah, but it was sort of fully imagined.
Right.
It really did feel like he had a person that he could trust, you know, in that same way. It's almost like when I originally read the book, I didn't care so much about the personal characters in his life as sort of the adventures that were going on and sort of the bigger set pieces. But in this, like, I found like I was really interested in the mother's story,
mm-hmm,
because she was so...
They fleshed her out a little bit too.
Yeah, so there was more to that. Cecil is a character who was always kind of weird in the comics, and we didn't know where, but I thought that the performance of the voice and that I know there's much more to what's going on than possible, but I don't remember the specifics of it. And I just thought he was really fascinating, because I thought, well, maybe he's not so bad, because in my head, I remember the comic book is like, no, he's much worse than he seems. But in this, I was kind of like, maybe he's not. You know, they had murkied it up enough that it was sort of new to me. Uh-huh. And I think that the voice acting had a lot to do with that. I don't know. Come back to me
I think that character had some great expressive animation too.
Yes.
Yes.
And everyone's favorite from the book. I loved Alan the Alien, who becomes extremely important later on in the book. Here he sort of shows up once and shows up at the end. And Seth Rogen was, when they announced it, I was like, Seth Rogen's doing Alan the Alien? And I thought, all right, interesting. But by the end of it,
he's a producer on the show, I think.
Yeah.
He's the guy, if they make a comic book property, then he has to be attached as a producer now forever, is from what I understand.
Well, it's David Goyer, and now it's Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen.
Yeah, I think he's great.
He seems like a cool dude, just in general.
I thought the voice really worked for Alan Alien.
I don't think he's actually done anything I've liked for a decade or so. So that he tends to lose some steam with me on that. But also, he's responsible for whatever that Preacher show was. But you know what I actually liked? When Alan comes back at the end, there was this, like, you know, oh, I have someone I can talk to.
Yeah.
Like, Mark was feeling overwhelmed by everything. And then they're like, oh, man, let me tell you about this. They sit down and they start to... And to Alan is the only person who isn't going to go, oh, my God, really? Wow. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, I get that. You know, it's just this kind of cool peer thing that happens there.
It's a great relationship in the comics. It's really incredible. I just keep looking at the list of names. You know, Jason Mantzoukas I love, and Rexplode can be annoying in the book and in the show, but I thought by the end of it, I really liked him as well. Even though I don't totally understand his powers.
Is
he Gambit?
He's Gambit.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I wasn't...
But, like, does he make those?
I think he was...
No, because at the beginning, he was carrying around stuff. Like, he has to have something he's carrying. I thought.
But
at one point, he was, like, throwing, like, letters at people.
I think that's, like, a gimmick.
I don't know. That team was all fun, too. Duplicate, you know, Doom Patrol / Teen Titans who become the Justice League, you know, was fun. I love the Taylor character that Mark Hamill voiced. Everything about this I love. The only thing, the interesting note, which I assume was a legal problem, was that the character of Isotope, the villain, who was based off of the look of comic book store owner James Syme, friend of iFanboy, did not look like James Syme in this show. I assume that some lawyer somewhere said, no, you can't do that, or you have to pay him money.
He does have a very iconic real-life look.
Yeah,
and in reality, he'd probably like, cool, put me in it, don't worry about it. But they didn't want to take that chance.
Yeah, I mean, he looked exactly like James Syme in the comics. But here, he's got a mullet instead. I
vaguely remember that now.
But what's great about this season is that it seeds all kinds of things. So you have the crime boss, that what happened in that episode. And then you have Duplicate, and you have Robot, and you have Monster Girl. And that's going to be interesting later. And you have Alan the Alien, and then you have the Viltrumites. You have all kinds of things that are going to lead to this tapestry of, you know, this whole world, if they end up doing the whole thing, which, like we said earlier, you don't care about.
They come back to that mummy guy.
The mummy guy.
There's a tangent in Egypt at the beginning of like episode 2 or 3, and another Clancy Brown voiced character, an archaeologist, goes into a tomb.
Maybe.
Like an evil spirit comes.
It's 15 years of stories.
And then the door comes slamming shut on it, and then we never go back to it.
They must. There'd be no reason to put it in otherwise.
I also like the Battle Beast, the Michael Dorn character.
Oh, well, Battle Beast is
how he just lays waste to everybody.
Yeah. Battle Beast is important. Battle Beast is a really important character.
And that's an Otley one.
Yeah. What was also reinforced here was how great the character designs in this book were. Like, really. Like, I think in the original Invincible costume is like an all-time great costume. And it's got the fucking Image logo right on it, and it doesn't bother me. And yeah, all these, you know, analogs even look great on their own, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good-looking show from a design standpoint, from an animation standpoint. It sounded great. The action was terrific. The book was compelling. The show was compelling. I mean, it really just it captured that feeling really well.
I don't know if you caught this. I feel like some of the needle drops are maybe from a mixtape that Kirkman was listening to when he originally wrote the comic.
Maybe.
He's got like the Hive on here.
It's possible.
Hives? Hives, yeah. Hives. Sorry.
Hives. They were going to be the next Nirvana, and then the Vines were going to be the next Nirvana.
Right.
And then
it was the period of music in the early aughts.
I mean, that's probably what that is. I mean, it's not like he hides his influences on his sleeve. Every trade is named after an 80s sitcom.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's right. The first three trades are Family Matters is the first one, Eight is Enough is the second one, and Perfect Strangers is the third one. And the amazing thing was the titles always corresponded to what happened in the trade very, very well.
I like until I was looking at the list of all the trades, and it's like it holds to the sitcom thing until it absolutely doesn't, when it's like the Viltrumite War.
Yeah, then it goes back to it. It's weird. It was weird.
Right.
That was weird.
There's like, I think it's like four or five that aren't based on a sitcom name.
I was not against watching it, but like I said, I watched the first one. That was really good. Then I didn't go back for weeks because there's a lot of other things, not just on TV, going on in the world. And so I was just like, oh, I'll get to it eventually. But then just the momentum on the show kept building every week. People were like, this show's
incredible.
In our chat,
I was like, are you guys watching this? Like, no, I haven't got to it. I was like, it's really good. And I'm going to assume when I say that about an animated show,
right,
you're going to be like, really?
That was definitely one of the things. It was you and it was Hank and as much of people I know who were like, this is really, really good. So, and I got tired of being like, are you watching this? No, get to it. But I'm glad I did. Say, it was incredible.
For anyone who hasn't watched it yet or was waiting for it to all be completed, a good way to watch it, I watched it on my iPad on the Prime app or whatever. And when you tap the screen, it'll pull up the X-ray on Prime.
Yeah. And it'll show you the voices. Amazon Prime.
I was doing that the whole time. I was watching the whole thing on my iPad, and I just kept tapping the screen whenever
a new
scene
started. It actually works. It works on the browser. You just click on the screen, or okay. It even works on Apple TV.
Yeah, you just click, tap the remote.
Tap the button.
Yeah, it's okay. One of the best innovations that they put in.
I get so annoyed with the other apps. Like, why don't you have this?
At the same time. Yeah, I was like, wait, who's that? Or like, what's that song? Because it'll tell you what the song is it's playing, or they'll put up a factoid.
Really, I think I'm actually glad the others don't have it because it can be incredibly distracting.
Yeah.
You know,
but
you don't get to play the game. Like, well, who the hell's this? You know, but it's probably better.
And there's some fun trivia in there, too. Like, there was the point where I tapped it and it was like, yep, Immortus was also Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, he was. Oh, Kirkman.
Stop calling him Immortus. That's Kang.
Immortal
different
Man?
Character.
Immortal Man. Is it Immortal Man?
Immortal Man? I'm sorry.
So animation being the thing that it is, you know, often animated shows are renewed in multiple seasons because you have a long lead time and it takes a while. So as Paul said earlier, this show was announced for 2 and 3. Who knows how long it'll take to get to that point because it takes a long time to do animation. But I'm looking forward to season 2. I'm really excited to see what they do with it. Also, I'm excited for people who've never watched it to get to experience this story. It is one of the best comic book stories of the last 20 years. I think
it's probably one of the only, I mean, also next to Walking Dead, it's one of the most sort of stalwart and just a really good original comic book.
Yep.
Story. There haven't been that many. There's not many that have had really long runs. You know, there aren't any indie comics other than The Walking Dead that go, you know, 100 something issues, come out regular as rain, start and finish. I mean, that's.
And the thing is, like, it's full of analogs, but it goes off in different directions.
Yeah, I was going to say, as someone who is really, like, I just groan every time I see another image of Superman with the glowing red eyes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so tired of them going back to evil Superman or, like, you know, mind-controlled Superman, badass Superman, Superman in a black costume, whatever. Like, this is a good one of those. It's because it's more than that.
Right.
Yeah, and also there's the layers between the father son relationship and then Nolan and his wife Debbie. There's a lot going on. It's not just evil Superman. There's a lot of betrayal.
Man,
there's a lot of hurt.
At the
feelings.
End of the scene, when he says that he thinks of her as more of a pet.
Yeah.
That made me, like, it was a pit in my stomach. I was like, God, what an, because I knew she was hearing it.
Yeah.
Like, God, what an, or like. If I heard, you know, if you heard your dad say that about your mom, like, because he's saying it to his son, like,
yeah.
God, I would, you know, that's when you go on a rage. Like, that's an awful thing to say.
And that's the kind of stuff that really set the book apart, was that it dived into some really heavy emotional stuff that went along with the action and the violence and all, you know, the jokes and everything. I thought Invincible Season 1 was terrific. I was really impressed. Looking forward to more. I'm impressed by the production, the voice acting, everything, the way they've updated the series and made it more refined. It took one of my favorite books and did a really incredible job of telling the story from the comics, but in a way that felt fresh and fun.
I agree with you.
I also agree.
Whew. We got that worked out.
Again, to go back to what we keep talking about, Paul and I do this all the time, talking about these DC movies, which are ostensibly animated adaptations, but it's hard to stay true to the story when you get, 70 minutes to do it. Whereas here, it gets to breathe like the comic, and you get to tell, little jokey bits or fun. Well, I mean,
that's the interesting thing is if, Kirkman hadn't been able to take this series out to, let's say 40, 50 issues, no one would remember it.
Right.
Because you really didn't get a chance to get good at it and build out this world and make all these things compelling. And you get to see over time that, you even get to see Ryan Otley develop into an artist over that. So, it was a whole thing that had it just been a shorter version of the thing, it would have been a blip, but somehow he managed to, obviously he's got a talent that we didn't know at the time, but he managed to keep this thing going and keep it on schedule and keep it coming out. And that's where all this stuff flowers from, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
And I just think for the artists, it must be so cool to see something that they worked on all these years ago, their formative years, to see it in motion in a way that really pays tribute to their work. Style.
Yeah. And they get a check.
Yeah, that too. When people promote something on their social media or something and you get the sense they're doing it, because you're supposed to. And then you get the sense, you get the sense that they're really into it. I got the sense that Ryan Otley was really into this.
That's good.
He just kept posting stuff about it. And then when Battle Beast came out, he put early sketches up and talked about it and how he felt about it. And, there was a real personal element to it. So, as one of the people, it's one thing to be like, oh, Robert Kirkman, he's had another hit. He's done it again. He's successful. But when you see a guy like Ryan Otley, who, I've known for a long time, and he's just this guy who showed up with talent and enthusiasm, and that was it, to see people respond to the thing that he's doing and to know that he's going to benefit from his work in this way that, most comic book people don't get a chance to.
And they're going
to
benefit on the hundreds of thousands of books they're going to sell from the show.
Yep.
This is going to be really good for the artists, and Kirkman's already incredibly mega wealthy, but it's going to be really great for Ryan Otley and for Corey Walker as well.
Yep, and I think that it should be. I just think that's one of those feelings this is how it is supposed to be, and that's great. It makes me feel really good, and it's really good. It's one thing you can get your paycheck, but have your paycheck be really good and be a really wonderful form of the work that you created. That's a win-win.
Yeah. And I think it's probably cool for the artist when it's a live action thing and seeing it in, realized in live action. But for it to be an animation, it's seeing, your stuff in motion. Mm-hmm.
It's much truer to the comics.
Yeah, it's much truer. And I thought about that, I don't know when you first started saying it, Connor, but it's almost animation is the best showcase for superhero stories, even better than a comic book.
Yep.
This is a really good case study for that. And at the beginning, I'm like, okay, I'm watching this through a couple of different lenses. And one of them is should this have been live action or is animation the right venue for this? And very quickly, it's apparent that this has to be animation.
Totally. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Was there a development of a live action thing?
I'm sure at some point someone put it in development, especially after Walking Dead.
No, I mean, just now. I feel like that was a thing that was just announced, but I might be wrong, but either way, don't do that.
Yeah, you don't have to make any of the compromises that are made for live action. And look, we all love that stuff too, but compromises are made in live action as opposed to comic pages, which you can keep true to in animation. And that's what's great about superhero animation. I've been saying that for years, is that it can still have the look and feel of the comics without having to have the heroes take their masks off all the time.
The stuff with Omni-Man versus the Guardians of the Globe at the end of that first episode, there's a bit where he just where he's got the Martian wrapped around him and he does this little pivot, just to get a breather and to shift his momentum. And I almost gasped as I was watching. It was the amount of forethought and choreography in that. It's not like he's just doing the same moves over and over again. He's not just pummeling them.
Right.
He's doing all these individual things, and some of them, it's a really dramatic kill. He slices through a person. Sometimes it's just really simple. The Green Ghost, I think, gets dispatched instantly. Mm-hmm. And then some of them are just Abe Lincoln gets you know, it's a big deal. And just, I don't know. I was so impressed with that. And like, you can't even come close to that in live action.
I'm a little disappointed they didn't get Daniel Day-Lewis.
I mean, tell you what, we can say that the cast is impressive, but if they'd gotten him, then it would be.
Isn't he retired?
Yeah, he's making shoes.
Well, he's cobbling.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, like, you want to call that retired, I guess.
It's hard work. Sandler?
It's just a different call.
Adam Sandler did a movie about being a cobbler. I'm mixing up Adam Sandler and Daniel Day-Lewis.
All right, so at the end of the day, we really like this series, this first season, which again encompasses the first three trades. If you're curious, if you've never read Invincible, Paul, anyone else, I heartly recommend the book. It's everything you loved about this season is in the book.
And, oh, sure.
And I would recommend anyone. It's an epic. It's a true epic, and they really capture that feeling in the first season of the show, and I'm looking forward to more. I guess we'll do ratings on it. I guess ratings out of 5, I'm going to give it 4.5.
I mean, for what it is, I give it a 5.
I also give it a 4.5. Because right. Amber deserved better. And I didn't like that episode where they went to the college as much as the other ones.
Yeah.
But it was very good. I don't want to end on a like middling note, but like,
didn't they buy hot dogs from a hot dog cart? I was like, what?
I would have done that.
I would have done that too, but there was no hot dog cart on our campus.
Tell you what, they had brought a hot dog cart to camp. That guy would have cleaned up.
Yeah,
he
would have
been on a boat by now. No chance that doesn't happen.
No, of course not.
But what I like is where we spend an hour going, oh, it's so good, it's so good. And then Paul, right at the end, yeah, but
I didn't like that part.
Well, that's because Hout's not here, and I needed to,
is that his
fulfill
job?
That role.
Okay. So, we're looking forward to more Invincible whenever it comes out. And in the meantime, Paul and our other partner, Dr. Ryan Haupt, talked about the DC animated films. The next one is coming up very soon. In fact, probably next week is the JSA World War II film, followed up shortly by the Batman Long Halloween Part 1 film. So those will be coming at you in the next month. And of course, Josh and I have our weekly comic show, the Pick of the Week, where we talk about the week's books.
Are you guys still doing that?
Still doing it.
Cool.
Do you know how we can stop?
It's nice to hear the spinoffs doing good.
So... Thanks for listening, and we'll be back. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Josh. I'm not coming back to this one for a while.